first question is, what's your name?
Charles Blakemore.
How long you been in Pontiac?
I came to Pontiac in March of 1939. That will make how many years? 39?
Almost 40. Where did you come from?
Mounds, Illinois.
Is there a reason why you came to Pontiac?
At the time I came here, the work was very scarce. I had a family and I had relatives here. So I came to Pontiac to see if I could find work.
Did you hear anything about Pontiac?
Well, I had the family. Part of my family had moved from Mound to Pontiac. So I had cousins here. I had relatives here. So I came to Pontiac with them because they were working here and said it was possible that I might be able to find work.
Then you come in?
Yes, I came here. But, oh, you want me to continue? I came here with them in March of 39. At the time I came here, work was very scarce. I had worked in Illinois in service station work. I had operated one for myself. I'd worked at one for quite a few years. So this was one of the advantages of something that I could do. At the time I came, I was able to get work with a man on South Saginaw, washing and polishing cars. At that particular time, there weren't too many jobs other than that that were available. I worked at service stations from 39. Well, I worked part-time for maybe a couple of years. Eventually, I got a job at a service station out on Europe. And I worked at this station steady for 39, for about a year and a half. In fact, there were two stations out there that I worked at for about 3 years, which took me up to around, I guess, the last of 41. That's about the span of 2 to 3 years. Well, I worked two at Goodyear for a while, washing cars. Washing and polishing cars was all I had. Was able to do for quite some time. Then it must have been in 42, the early part of 42, I went to work at Hubert Trucking, which has moved now. It's down where Jerome's Cadillac used to be. Hubert used to be in that locality. I lubricated and gassed trucks for them. From there, I went to General Motors Truck and Coach in September of 42. And I remained at General Motors Truck and Coach until my retirement in 72. I came away out of Truck and Coach in 72. So up until 70 to 42, most of my jobs were just service station jobs. But in 42, when I went in Truck and Coach, I went in, it's an amazing thing, I went in, I think it was the job I had, I went in at 85 cents an hour, and my top was 95. And over the years, there were raises. There were strikes. There were raises. But I'm one of the people who did stay on a job. Having a family, it was important to me to stay on the job. I had, did you? Well, did you want me to talk about my family or the job or what? Now.
How much you used to make when you was working the gas station and then also another place?
At the gas station, I can put it at me, $3 or $4 a day. It was a good wage. But I can't remember how much I got off for a car. It must have been 50 cents a car. And if I got two or three cars, maybe four cars a day, that was a good wage. That, in a sense, that was a living wage, because I can remember very well that, I don't know exactly what year it was, but during that period before I went into the plant, I can remember going to the AMP store and spending $3 or $4, and I couldn't carry the groceries home. I can remember at one time I used to think how I'd like to be able to have $20 just to spend for groceries. And I'd have to have them hauled home in a, well, that's a pickup truck. So that shows the change in the amount of food or that we can buy today and what we could buy then. I was one of those people, even when I first, well, from the time that my family started, that tried to keep them in food, clothing, as much as I possibly could. I was the person who cared for my family.
How did you hear about trucking coach?
Well, they were hiring a trucking coach. I got to know a man out on the west side by the name of Sykes, and he advised me to put in applications at different plants. Well, in fact, after they started hiring a truck and coach and the big plants, most of us were trying to get jobs, and we more or less, to a certain extent, we almost had to know someone in order to be able to get a job. I remember this man advised me to put in an application out at what was the name of that old place now? They've torn it down. There's no plant over on Greenwich Street. But I did put an application in a truck and coach. And it so happened that the service station where I worked, there was one of the men in the employment personnel department that I knew very well. And I think he was probably instrumental in helping me to get my job at truck. I'm almost sure you
are. How was the housing condition at that time?
Housing conditions were very bad, especially for people who came in. At the time I came to Pontiac, I had three kids. We had three boys. Well, we had two girls. And two boys. We had four. it was especially hard to get a place to stay with children. I stayed with my cousins. At the time I came, my youngest daughter came with me. And then in August, my wife and the rest of the kids came. It was especially, as I said, hard to find a place to stay. But I stayed with my cousins, and then eventually we got a room with some people down the street from where they lived. And we stayed there for quite some time until I moved with another cousin on Hibbert Court, stayed with them. This was due to the fact that you couldn't rent a place to stay with kids. People just, there were some, housing was so sharp that they just would fool with it. And this was during the time when I had the little jobs at the service station working for the trucking company. And when I went to trucking coach, I eventually was able to rent a house. I rented a house on Hibbert Court. I can remember that. I can't remember how much I paid then, but it wasn't too much. And I remember there was water in the basement. And I told the man once that if he didn't get the water out, that I wasn't going to pay the rent. Well, he made me find another place to stay. And at that particular time, they were having trailers for people who were coming in here. The plants were beginning to boom then. This was during the war. The plants were beginning to boom. They were needing people to work. So they had begun building the trailer homes for people to live in. Well, due to the fact that I was going to be put out of the place where I lived, I had a priority on getting one of the trailers. And we moved in one of the trailers for quite a while. After we left the trailers, I moved in what they call the old project. It's torn down. It was on Crystal Lake. And we lived there for, we started there in 43, I believe. Yes, I believe we moved in there in 42. Because my kids, all my kids grew up there.
How was the condition like inside the house, the, you know, the bathrooms, where it was located, the dining rooms? Do you have enough room for it?
Yes, the, when we, well, the trailers, when we first came here, where we stayed at the homes, yeah, there wasn't too much room because as a rule, we just had one room and a place to cook. It was very crowded then. But in the trailers, they were built so that they were sufficient to take care of us. We had showers, we had outside toilets, but we had plenty of sleeping room, plenty of room and cooking in the trailers. And also in the project, when we went in the projects, they were very modern buildings and they were compact. You had a nice kitchen, dining room, nice side living room, and we had three bedrooms. Shower, toilet. They were nice. They were very nice. It was very nice housing for that particular time. Well, in fact, it was very nice housing when we lived in the project.
This is just for my surprise. When you live in a project or the trailer, was it all blacks or including white?
They were black and white to begin with. And then after a while they began the whites began to drift out. Some of them began to buy homes. And then they had
after a period of time, they had one project on East Boulevard that was principally white. I think it was all white. And then the project on Crystal Lake got to be all black. And I think I'm right in saying that, yes. But when the people were first coming in, there were black and white in the trailers, I can remember that. But when they still built a project, there was a white project and a black project, yes.
Okay, you was living with this project. How much discrimination was there? How much discrimination between the way of living in the black and the way of living in the whites? I mean, the children do look the same.
Yes, they were practically the same.
They're practically the same.
Yeah, they were practically the same because they more or less had a standard way of building. As I said, they were roomy. They were compact, but they were roomy. And I would say there was no difference in the two projects per se, other than one was for one color and one was for the other. Yes.
When you were working in track and coach, what was the payment, which is, you say, about 85 cents an hour?
Yes.
Is it for all blacks and whites?
Yes, I would think yes. If you were in a classification, you earned the same as the other man. But there were, to begin with, I would think that most of us were put in a classification where we earned the lowest wage. As I say, due to the fact that I did know this man, I think I was put in a classification where, as a rule, I made a dime. My pay would be about a dime more than the average one of my color there. That was just one of those things. But the overall picture was that in the classifications that we were put in, we did make as much as the other man, but we weren't put in too many classifications where we made more than that. Does that answer your question?
Okay, let's go back to unemployment. Okay, there was a few jobs in Pontiac. How high unemployment was in the black area in Pontiac?
It's hard for me to say too much really about that because of the fact that there were so many who really didn't want to. You know, it's hard to picture unemployment then as now. But the jobs that were available and the people who were available to do the work, as you know, that most of the jobs for us were porters, car washes, such things as that. And then there weren't as many jobs. For the overall picture, there weren't as many jobs.
What about the woman?
Well, there were some jobs for the women because there were quite a few women who worked in Birmingham, at the homes in Birmingham, as maids and house cleaners and such as that. I would think at the particular time there were more jobs for the women than there really were for the men. You know, some of these things you just more or less have to kind of see them as they were. But just the overall picture, I think probably there were more jobs for the women.
Let's go back to health condition. How
was a hospital for black people. How do they take care of health conditions?
Well, as far as that's concerned, I don't think there was any difference because I more or less had direct connection with him. My wife was a diabetic. And we hadn't been here too long when she got an infected hand. There wasn't any question about her being in the hospital and she was taken care of. So as far as getting health care and such as that, there wasn't a marked difference. There wasn't a marked difference.
You was covered by any insurance company?
I stated that, I don't know what happened. I can remember paying the doctor that treated her, but she was in evidently, I can't remember now, about 4 times in the hospital because I don't remember being on the welfare at that particular time. And I don't remember being called for hospital bills. So evidently, I must have been in the plant. And Blue Cross must have taken me.
How many black doctors were there around the party at that time? If you remember.
Let's see. About two. One of them hasn't been out of practice. That's where you get me when it comes to names. There were two black doctors active at that time. Yeah. I can't remember over two at the time, around the time I came here.
Okay. Let's go back into politics. How many black political leaders were around in Pontiac between 1940 and 45?
Well, that I can't tell you too much about because at that particular time I was more or less trying to make a living for my family and I didn't pay too much attention to politics really. So there isn't really too much I can tell you about that. I do know that there was voting going on and such things as that, but I really didn't have any interest in it. And as I say, I really can't tell you anything about it.
Didn't you have any black newspapers or radio station to listen or something?
No, not at that particular time. I can't remember the Pontiac paper. The black newspaper started some time ago back in there, but it didn't last too long. As you might say, my interest shouldn't run too much about knowing. See, we weren't as active as you were, as you are now, about trying to find out what was going on. Because survival was the big problem then. Yeah, survival was the big problem then. As far as politics and such things as that, there were some who were working in politics who were making a living off of it, but the average person was wanting to survive, wanting a place to work, to take care of his family like that. And so I would say the average one of us didn't do like we do today. We don't sit down and read the papers and see what man we want or try to decide if we want to be a part of the whole picture that's going on. So, well, let me say that I was right there, to a certain extent. I don't know about the other person. I think the average one of us were.
What about some organization, black organizations?
There wasn't too much. There wasn't too much. Too many, really. Survival, as I say. Individual survival was the most important thing. We hadn't really learned to band together to help each other. See, there were certain periods of where you found that one would work against the other in a sense to survive himself. I hope you can understand what I mean. If I were able to influence the number of people to do a thing, well, and make profit out of it myself, I didn't think about the overall picture of what I was doing to my race or to my people. I was just thinking about what I'm getting in my pocket. There were quite a few like that. And that was more or less the big political picture in most places.
As we hear today, like the NAACP, Urban Leagues, and other organizations before 1940, but I was wondering how active they were in the Pontiac area.
I'm not able to tell you too much about them. I guess they were active. But there wasn't too much they could do. They were organized before that time. But these organizations didn't become too active until after 45, I guess, really. In most cases, in most places. But with a picture like it was here, there really wasn't too much they could do. That's my memory of it, my version of the way it was.
Yeah, you were a black man. Whenever you need something, you go somewhere who's a black literacy to talk about your case or maybe to call somebody for some reason. He was a big man you depend on, call.
There wasn't too much. You know, I can remember an incident that my son and another kid were going to school. I went to a school basketball game or something. And the policeman stopped him, and he smacked my son. Well, I went to the lawyer to do something about it, more or less tried to do something, I guess, with the NAACP about it. And I went down to the police station, and I found out the man who had slapped him. And we were trying to make a case of it. The first thing I knew, the boy who was with him wasn't going to say anything about it. He wasn't going to testify or do anything about it. See, this has been a place where there were so many people who made their money outside of the law. And I guess this is what happened in that particular case. The man had been making his living that way, and there wasn't anything he could do. His livelihood livelihood was at stake if his son testified about what had happened. So that was the last thing.
What did the NAACP do?
Well, there was nothing they could do. If there was no testimony, no one to make a protest.
Okay, you talk about schooling. How was the condition of the school at that time?
The schooling conditions weren't too bad. There were neighborhood schools. The children were taken care of. I especially have to be grateful myself because I have a son who had polio. And he went to a special school. They had transportation to pick him up, to take him to school over the years that he went to school. And after he finished high school, they saw to it that he went to business college. So as far as the schooling was concerned, I think it was all right. There wasn't too much strife. They went to, as we say, neighborhood schools. Most of the schools were black or white, whatever they were in the section. But for that particular time, I guess it wasn't too bad. And then too, see, I had come from a section of the country where these schools were really segregated. And when we came here, there were blacks and whites going to school together here. And I guess to a big extent, there didn't seem to be as much strife as there was when, maybe when they started trying to force them to go. So personally, I can't say too much against what the schooling was then. Maybe it wasn't right, but I personally can't say too much against it.
What attracts people to Pontiac?
Well, at the time when so many people came to Pontiac, there was hardly any work anywhere. It was during the war. People were scarce to work. So they would go into the South and offer people transportation to come to Pontiac. They needed the people to work in the war plant. So it was a good thing for them to come here. And as one family would come and settle in the plant and work, there was a lot of work here. They would send and get their relatives. So this is what made it so attractive for people to come here.
How did they hear about it, besides the family?
Oh, they would put it in papers in the South and, yeah, advertise for people to come to Pontiac to work. Advertise it in the papers and give them transportation. And then word of mouth. After one came here, they would ride back and tell the relatives. So this was the thing that made it so attractive.
What was the entertainment place for a black man?
Well, there were two. There were about two bars that black legitimate bars that people could go to. And then too, for quite a few years, there weren't too many to patronize these places. But there was entertainment. And then too, being as close to Detroit as we were, see, there were a number of bars in Detroit. That's where most of the people who were affluent enough went to for their entertainment.
Where were transportation?
Well, people were able to. There were people owned cars here. See, the plants had been here for quite a few years, and there were some few people working in the plant.
Okay, I don't like to be personal, but I was interested to know the music conditions, how the, like, between 1940s and 1945, What kind of dancer was dancing? Because there's a lot of names on it, you know, today. But I want to know what kind of dancer
she was. I don't know. I never did dance, but they had the dances down what? Two-stepping, I think it was. Waltzing? They used to have what they call the waltz. And two-stepping. They had the Charleston. I guess you probably have the Charleston. I think that was... It was just me, to me, that was doing those years. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let me go to entertainment, which is one of our hobby, you know. Which is entertainment is our hobby, you know. Mm-hmm. So those two bars you have, do you ever have any guests or shows coming over there?
No, there weren't. They used to have little local shows. They used to have quite a few entertainers come in. I don't know, there's not too many shows, entertainers of note, because Pontiac wouldn't support it. But there were a lot to see. Practically all the big entertainers came in to Detroit. See, they had one or two places down in Detroit where they could accommodate crowds of any kind. All of the great artists of the country would come in there, black and white. And so consequently, Pontiac wasn't a very good place for these people to be because the crowds wouldn't support it. As I say, being as close to Detroit as well. I don't know whether, you know, at the time I came here, I was thinking about transportation. There used to be an urban that ran from Detroit to Pontiac. But I'm almost sure it wasn't when I came here. I can't recall. No, it wasn't. But the transportation for people wasn't that bad, going that distance. A lot of jobs that ordinarily they would never work on, and that's the time when they started hiring women in the plants because they need them. And they were able to, but any time, any men that they were able to get, that was a bonus. It was a bonus.
No man.
I can remember myself now. I came here in 39, and in my hometown there were some, well, I had the five kids because my last son was born in 41. And having the five kids, I didn't have to go in service because I was in Pontiac here where I was working in the war plant. Some of the fellows who stayed at my hometown with five kids had to go in service. So it was quite a conducive thing for a person to leave his hometown and come here and be working in a war plant. He didn't even have to go in service, a lot of kids. Especially if he were a married man and had a family to take care of.
How would the Pontiac look like, the city of Pontiac, comparing to today?
It wasn't quite as sprawling. The sections of Pontiac that they have torn down where there were store buildings, like in downtown. The downtown was much more congested. There were a lot of buildings there. Where Wide Track is, there were streets in there where people lived in those areas. Where they made Wide Track, there were people lived. Those were just continuous streets where people lived. So it wasn't nothing like as sprawling as it is now. You know, with integration and the busing and such things as that. Well, in the recent years, the people began to move out. And we began to spread out in the other sections of the city too.
Court system, the police system, or police brutality, how bad was it?
Well, that I don't know too much about, because at that particular time, now there was one or two black on the force. But As to what their status was, I don't know. I can't tell you too much about that because I had no contact with the police other than the time that they smacked my son. So I really can't tell you anything.
Do you know anything about a black lawyer?
Yeah, there was a black lawyer here. Very active. This man's still alive. And well, he was the only black lawyer here for quite a few years. But in recent years, there are many more. But that was a black lawyer. Very good lawyer.
What was the condition for work in the plant? Is it secure, safe for your health condition?
Yes, it was. The unions had been in the plant before we started in there, and working conditions were reasonably good. Another thing, they hired so many people that really it wasn't too bad, because they had what they called the government, with most of the plants were under government supervision to a certain extent, and the government would pay so much cost plus, some kind of cost plus thing. So it didn't take, the factories didn't care too much about having too many people. So the working conditions weren't really that.
What was the working hours?
Well, your working hours, you could work practically all you wanted to. Well, you were on the 8-hour day, but you could work, usually you worked 7 days a week, sometimes 10 and 12 hours a day. But this was to your advantage, because the more hours you worked, the more money you made. So each person wanted to work about as many hours as he wanted.
Yeah, let's go back to the skilled trade. How many black people work in the skilled trade?
Well, there were hardly any, because they were just starting in the plant. Yeah, we were just starting in the plant. There were maybe one or two men who had worked in the plant for years. And about the only jobs the blacks had in plants was the chauffeurs. Men who took care of the cars for the executives. Those were about the only blacks in the plant, and maybe one or two more who probably drove a truck or something like that. But the overall picture was that the average man wasn't in the skilled trade because he hadn't had a chance to learn it. And it took quite a few years before he was given the opportunity to get into skilled trade. To learn the trade.